Pharmacy Nation, I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 117. In this episode, I'll discuss an article about delays in antimicrobial therapy in patients with septic shock, have a recent pharmacy student of mine answer the drug information question, what dose of IV diltiazem should be used to treat rapid AFib, and share a resource for assessing, preventing, and managing ICU delirium. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode117. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. Before we begin, I'd like to share a pearl from my book, A Pharmacist's Guide to Inpatient Medical Emergencies. And that is to give medications to the nurse in the most ready-to-administer form possible at inpatient medical emergencies. That includes dispensing a flush, an alcohol swab, and spiking and priming IV lines. And at the end of this article, I'll discuss a little bit more about why I think this particular step is important. So the article that I'll be talking about on this episode is Patient and Organizational Factors Associated with Delays in Antimicrobial Therapy for Septic Shock. The lead author was Andre Amaral, and this was published ahead of print online in the journal Critical Care Medicine. Time to first antibiotic is of particular interest in the context of caring for patients with septic shock. An often cited observational study, which I do have linked in the show notes, associated each 1 hour delay in time to first antibiotic for septic shock patients with an 8% increase in mortality. The authors of this study sought to identify clinical and organizational factors associated with delays in antimicrobial therapy for septic shock. The study was a retrospective cohort analysis of critically ill patients with septic shock spread across 24 different ICUs. A total of 6,720 patients with septic shock were included in the final analysis. The time to first antibiotic was delayed significantly in several groups. There was a 24-minute delay per every 5 acute physiology or Apache score point increase that a patient had, a 16-minute delay per every 10 years of patient age increase, a 35-minute delay if comorbidities were present, a 50-minute delay if hospital length of stay before onset of hypotension was less than 3 days, and if this was from 3 to 7 days, the delay increased to 121 minutes. And if this was greater than 7 days hospital length of stay before onset of hypotension, the delay was 130 minutes. Other groups with significant delays included 45-minute delay if the diagnosis was pneumonia, 52-minute delay if the patient was admitted to an academic hospital, and 39-minute delay if the patient was transferred from a medical ward compared to surgical ward. The time to first antibiotic was shortened significantly in two groups. It was a 53-minute shorter time if the infection was community acquired, and a 15-minute shorter time per every 1 degree Celsius increase in temperature that the patient presented with. The authors concluded, "We identified clinical and organizational factors that can serve as evidence-based targets for future quality improvement initiatives on antimicrobial timing. The observation that academic hospitals are more likely to delay antimicrobials should be further explored in future trials." Only 15.2% of patients in the study received antibiotics within the first 1 hour of care. This represents a tremendous opportunity for improvement in the real-world care of septic shock patients. From the perspective of a hospital-based pharmacist responding to rapid response calls for septic patients, one particular group with delayed antibiotic timing caught my eye. That was the group with the 24-minute delay for every 5 Apache score points that increased. The more acutely ill the patient is, which is represented by the Apache score, the more the nurse and the physician are forced to attend to immediately catastrophic patient management priorities, such as profound hypotension or respiratory failure. And a pharmacist that obtains and prepares for immediate administration of antibiotics while the rest of the team is focused on these other management priorities like mean arterial pressure less than 50 or the patient experiencing respiratory failure needing to be bagged or intubated. The pharmacist that obtains and prepares the antibiotic ahead of time is going to significantly decrease the time to first antibiotic for a critically ill patient. So that's why if the rest of the team is tied up with these immediately life-threatening patient management needs, I'll obtain the antibiotic, the tubing, the smart pump, I'll prime the line, and give the antibiotic to the nurse in the most ready-to-administer form possible. The drug information question and answer for this episode is provided by a pharmacy student who recently completed my APPE rotation, Pharmacy Gavin. Shout out to Gavin for the excellent work answering this question. The drug information question is, what dose of IV diltiazem should be used to treat rapid AFib? And the answer is a 10 milligram standard dose or weight-based dosing, such as 0.25 milligrams per kilo, is appropriate. If the patient has severe hypotension, consider just 5 milligrams slow IV push and repeat the dose as needed until 0.25 milligrams per kilo is reached. A recent retrospective review that Gavin had found that patients who received a standard 10 milligram diltiazem dose had a non-inferior reduction in heart rate compared to those that received the more traditional and larger weight-based dose. Interestingly, there were similar rates of hypotension between both groups. Also, for patients who presented with hypotension, 80% of them improved their blood pressure to above 90 millimeters mercury after diltiazem. This may be explained by slowing the heart rate enough that the ventricles were allowed more time to fill, which improved cardiac output. And the resource for this episode is the website icudelirium.org. This website contains a large amount of material to support clinicians seeking to assess, prevent, and manage ICU delirium. The site is sponsored by Vanderbilt University Medical Center. I've used the site for its numerous delirium resources, including the email contact, which I have a direct link to in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode117. And this email contact was able to put me in touch with a pharmacist at Vanderbilt when I had a specific question about how they structure their sedation protocol to minimize delirium. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my link to Amazon. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just bookmark and use the link pharmacyjoe.com/shop to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.